let's wait just a minute and let everyone get settled. Okay, Mr. Norris.
May it please the court. Your Honors, this case has three issues. One, on the age discrimination claim as to whether plaintiff could show pretext. Two, whether the plaintiff's retaliation claim was properly dismissed by the district court. And the third is a counter appeal by the defendant or the appellee claiming that it is not an employer. First is to the regard of the pretext issue. The court determined that the plaintiff had not shown inconsistencies and discrepancies in the qualifications or the explanations by the judges. We would contend that there were numerous inconsistencies, not only between the judges, but between the appellee and the judges, the circuit court judges in this case that act as agents for the appellees. Particularly with the appellees, after the judges had given their reasons in their motion for summary judgment, they raised their own explanation to further justify what the judges had done and cited numerous cases outside of the circuit court, cases before the circuit court judges to claim that the appellant had issues with his performance. However, every circuit judge admitted they had not considered any of those cases, and this was something raised purely by appellee's counsel. We believe this in and of itself is a material alter of their reason for not hiring the appellant under the Burrell case. And that in and of itself is enough for the case to proceed to trial. But as well, there are many inconsistencies between the judges. The circuit court judges, some claimed that they only interviewed people they did not know, except the people they hired and interviewed, they knew and admitted they knew. There were some justices who said that they did not remember exactly what they discussed regarding Mr. Easley, but were sure that each time he applied, they discussed him, considered him. And other justices said, no, they don't remember ever having conversations with him. The appellee claims everything is consistent, but there are numerous inconsistencies the appellee has brought forward in this situation, and many of those, not just inconsistencies, but disputes of fact, where, for instance, Justice Howard alleged that Mr. Easley had told him he only wanted to work 2 years so he could qualify for his best for his PERS retirement. And while Mr. Easley admits part of the reason he was seeking the position was for to qualify for that PERS retirement, he disputes that he only was seeking to work 2 years, and he was also there to give his the wages as a part-time public defender. There's also Justice Kitchens, who claims that part of his reasons that he had issues with Mr. Easley, claiming that there was a, not a necessarily a fight, but a threat to physically for both of them to fight at the courthouse, but prior to Justice Kitchens taking the bench. Mr. Easley has denied that. That's a clear dispute of fact that should go to a jury to determine. So there are numerous inconsistencies, not just between the judges, but between the agents, the judges, and the appellee that should allow, and as well, the qualifications. Mr. Easley was a Mississippi Supreme Court justice who had been on the bench and practiced for decades, numerous felony criminal experience, and while the individuals hired were barely out of law school, never tried a felony case. These were serious inconsistencies in between their qualifications that should also, while in and of itself, with the defendant's legitimate non-discriminatory reason that they've alleged, that those indiscrepancies in itself are not enough because we still have to dispute it, but we think between those discrepancies, between the qualifications, their inconsistencies, that this should be enough for the at least the age discrimination claim to proceed to trial. With regard to the retaliation claim, we've cited the court case law from the Southern District where they sought to dismiss the case and argued the age discrimination, but did not raise the retaliation claim. We believe that they, by not raising an argument regarding the retaliation claim, they cannot seek to dismiss it. And the court was improper to dismiss the entire case because of that. The defendant.
You did not raise the retaliation issue in response to the renewed motion for summary judgment.
That's correct. We did not specifically point to the court that it was not raised, but I believe in seeking summary judgment, the defendant has to make an argument for dismissing a claim, and their failure should not, you know, be put on us to go back and point to that issue. We believe the court should have acknowledged that and not ruled on the retaliation claim. And the court doesn't really address the retaliation claim. It only addresses the age claim and dismisses the case. With regard to the employer issue, we believe the court was right. This is, very frankly, it's just an issue of we see evidence of what happens when the county employs individuals. They put them on their payroll. The board approves them. And when the circuit court hires its employees, such as its law clerks, it goes to the administrative courts and hires them that way. This case is a little nuanced in the sense that we have a state public defender system set out by law, and there's two different types. There's one that's a full-time / part-time public defender, and then there's another one that's case-by-case basis. The defendant or the appellee has raised this issue on appeal saying, well, we're following the case-by-case basis. We contend that is waived because they have not raised it, but even if they had, it does not qualify. This does not meet the case-by-case basis. These people weren't handling issues on a case-by-case basis. They were employed by the county to handle all of the public defender work for that county, even though it was on a part-time basis, but for an entire year, not on a case-by-case assigned by a judge type of situation. Where I say it's a little nuanced in this case, the judges don't really follow the law necessarily in this. The public defenders, I think, are supposed to be appointed for 3 or 4 years. The judges only appoint them for a year. They're supposed to get a list from the local bar association. They don't do that. There's a lot of other things that they, that both the county and the judges don't do, but they clearly have adopted a public defender system. It just, they're not really complying with the law in either situation on a case by case or individual. The employer to the EEOC had claimed, the appellee had claimed, well, we're not really the employer because the circuit judges are making this decision and we're required by law to just follow whatever they do. Well, there's a little yes and no to that. They say that we don't have a public defender system, which means they wouldn't be required to follow that law. But at the same time, if a judge decides to they claim the circuit court judges have the ability to not employ that person anymore. And that's not accurate. Judges certainly have the ability to control their courtroom and ban people from their courtroom. But that would be probably akin to my office hiring someone to come watch Fifth Circuit arguments every day. And I could come to the bench and ask the court, do you have any recommendations for who should be come listen to your arguments on my law firm's behalf. And if that person was inappropriate in the courtroom and the court banned them from the courtroom, that doesn't make them not my employee anymore. That just means they can't do what I hired them to do. I can still keep them on the payroll. I can have them do what I wish. They're my employee. I'm the person that hired them. And same thing for the county. It is the county that hires them, and they set their pay, they set the terms in their minutes, what the term will be. In this situation, they do what the circuit judges wish. There is a lot of working back and forth in that that aspect. It's kind of like a temp agency going to supply employees at a manufacturer like Nissan or Toyota. They're still the employees of the temp agency, but that manufacturer controls a good bit of what they do on a day-to-day basis. Your Honor, I believe that is my argument in chief. If the court has any further questions, I'd be happy to provide any answer.
You save time for rebuttal. Thank you, Mr. Norris.
Sir.
Ms. Lee?
May it please the court. My name is Jamie Lee, and I represent Lowndes County in this case. Your Honor, the district judge got it right when she found that Chuck Easley failed to come forward with any probative evidence that the 16th Circuit judge's reasoning for choosing another public defender over him were pretextual. As the district court correctly pointed out in his own deposition, Mr. Easley stated and admitted that all the evidence he had of age discrimination in this case was hearsay, what he heard. And as this court knows, that is simply not enough evidence at all to create a pretextual inference in this case. On the other hand, Your Honors, the reasons for not choosing Easley as a public defender were legitimate and non-discriminatory and non-rebutted in this case. The judges who chose these public defenders, and there were judges that chose these public defenders, Judges Coleman, Judge Kitchens, and Judge Howard, collectively wanted a candidate who was prompt to their courtroom, who had the necessary time to devote to the job, and who got along well with others. It's what any judge would want in a public defender. Easley's own testimony undergirds the judge's rationale that he was not the right fit for the job, not because of his age, Your Honor, but because of his admittedly overburdened law practice, his reputation for seeking multiple continuances over his 35-year career as a lawyer, and the general notion that he created conflict in the courtroom and didn't get along well with others. Where the district court erred, and the only place Judge Aycock erred, was not dismissing this case at the outset because Lowndes County is not the proper employer under the ADEA, and the county has cross-appealed to this court on that issue.
Who is the proper employer, or what is the proper employer?
The employer, Your Honor, we would argue would be the circuit court judges, not that they would qualify as employers under the ADEA, because we would argue they would not, but it's not the county in this case. As the Fifth Circuit has pointed out, you look at the hybrid economic realities and control test, and all of the control in this case of the public defenders is exercised by those circuit judges I just named, Howard, Kitchens, and Coleman. Those three judges oversaw those public defenders. Contrary to what counsel opposite has argued, the district court correctly found it is those judges who hired these public defenders. It's uncontroverted these judges have the ability to fire those public defenders. There's an order that's a part of the record where the judges found that the county basically should put these public defenders on the payroll. The only involvement the county has in the public defenders in this case is actually cutting the check for their employment. There is absolutely no supervision by the county of their day-to-day work. All of that is done by the bench, Your Honor, in what Coleman, Kitchens, and Howard all do as circuit judges. So we would argue that under the hybrid economic realities and control test, the most important factor is control, and all factors point to the control of the circuit judges here. The district court, as the court well knows—
If you're right on that, what's the proper remedy?
First we would argue that there is no age discrimination claim.
I understand that, yes. But on your cross appeal, you're essentially, as I understand it correctly, that's an alternative basis for affirmance?
It would be an alternative a basis for dismissal and affirmance. The district court found that the county was the employer and denied a summary judgment on that issue. We think that we were correct and that the Lowndes County cannot.
Would the result in the district court be any different? Let's say you're right on your cross-appeal. I'm not saying you are. Would the result of the judgment be any different?
It would not, Your Honor. It would.
It's not really a cross-appeal. It's really just...
I guess, Your Honor, we would consider it a point of law that the district court incorrectly decided, and we would ask this court to decide that as an issue moving forward in the case. But Your Honor is absolutely correct. The result we're asking for is the same, which is an affirmance of the summary judgment decision by the district court. And the district court did get it right on the age discrimination claim. There is no evidence in the record to establish any pretext. As counsel opposite attempted to argue, the idea that there's inconsistency in these judges' reasonings for not hiring Mr. Easley, it's simply not true. The judges have been consistent in their reasoning. They all had their own reason. Judge Coleman said that he believed that there simply was not enough time to devote to the practice of the public defender by Mr. Easley. Judge Howard believed that Mr. Easley was only really after the PERS benefits, which was not a good reason for being a circuit judge. And Judge Kitchen said, and there is the evidence is replete, that Mr. Easley had a problem with behaving in the courtroom and getting along well with others. And there was ample evidence that he was bombastic in his approach in the courtroom. Obviously, as a public defender, you want someone who can work well with others. It's not just a matter of being a good lawyer. No doubt Mr. Easley is a good trial lawyer, and I think Judge Kitchens even said he was a fine trial lawyer. But that's simply not what these judges were looking for collectively. What the judges all considered to be important, what they all agreed on, is that Mr. Easley had essentially a bad reputation for being dilatory, for not being on time to court, for asking for multiple continuances, for not being found on court days. Certainly, if you have the office of the public defender, it's important to be available. Your docket is going to be very busy with cases, and you need someone who can do that work. Contrary to what counsel opposite has argued in this case, Mr. Easley actually admitted that his practice was very busy. He stated that he had tried more cases or was the busiest lawyer in the area, that he was exceptionally busy with divorce work, that women loved him in divorce work because he was very aggressive, and that he stayed very busy working six days a week up until 8 o'clock at night. So obviously, these judges were concerned that there was not enough time to devote to the practice of the public defender that they thought was important here. There was a mention by counsel opposite of a failure to interview Mr. Easley for the position. Mr. Easley, of course, admitted in his deposition these judges all knew him. He had practiced in the same circuit for 35 years. There was simply not a reason to interview Mr. Easley for the position. In fact, the district court found this was an informal interview process and that the two public defenders who were chosen did speak to the judges about the position, but it was not a formal interview process. It certainly wasn't the formal interview process that the court saw in the Stinnett case, which was cited by the plaintiff. In that case, the Tupelo School District did have a formal interview process, and in that unusual fact pattern, as this court called it, Ms. Stinnett was denied an interview 5 times out of the 7 times she applied when others were, in fact, formally interviewed. And in that case, you had other factors which led to the court finding some pretext for age discrimination. Those other factors were the fact that Ms. Stinnett was substantially more qualified than the other candidates, with the other candidates not really having any qualifications for the position. And there was also evidence that the Tupelo School District had been repeatedly filling positions with persons that were younger over persons that were older. And all those facts collectively led this court to find that there was evidence of pretext. Speaking of the disparity in qualifications, counsel opposite talked about that, but simply having more years in the courtroom versus less years as a young lawyer does not a pretext make, and that is in this court's decision in Moss, 610 F3rd at 923. Mr. Easley admitted in his deposition that he had no evidence as to the qualifications of the two lawyers that he contends should not have been chosen over him. He didn't know if they'd ever tried a case or what their qualifications were. So he hasn't put forth any evidence to show that there was such a disparity in qualifications that no reasonable employer would choose the selected candidate over the plaintiff, which is the standard that this court has. So for all of those reasons, Your Honor, we would argue that the district court got it right when she decided that there was simply no evidence of pretext. As the district court cited in her own opinion, page 4 of her opinion, our counsel for Lowndes County asked the question of Mr. Easley, do you have any evidence other than your feeling about your being the best lawyer that you can bring forward to the court as to why there is a jury issue as to someone else being selected but for your age? And Mr. Easley's answer was, not at this time. I'm sure when we do these depositions, you'll see, But no, I don't have any other written documents, just the hearsay I've heard. And that's the deposition of Mr. Easley, which is included in the record, Your Honor. I think that quote speaks for itself and speaks to why Judge Aycock found as she did on the age discrimination claim. As to the retaliation claim, Your Honor, we did argue in our memorandum of authorities at, I believe it's record 251, citation record 251, that we were arguing the McDonald-Douglas test under both a retaliation and a discrimination analysis, and we went on to do that. The district judge didn't specifically talk about retaliation in her opinion, but as this court is well aware, if you can't establish pretext for discrimination, you can't establish pretext for retaliation. And this court can decide that on any grounds that are supported by the record, and we would argue that in fact is supported by the record, that there was no evidence of pretext in any retaliation claim presented by Mr. Easley, the appellant in this case, Your Honor. If the court has any further questions, I'll be happy to answer it. Otherwise.
All right, thank you, Ms. Lee.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Norris, you save time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Appellee mentions that appellant has not offered differences in qualifications and cites to the plaintiff's or the appellant's deposition testimony. But it was not just the appellant's deposition testimony that was taken. We took the appellant's deposition testimony first, but then we took the judge's testimony. We took the individuals that were hired's testimony. We got their qualifications on the record, and we've cited it. Their qualifications are very clear. It's not hearsay. They're admitting to it on the record. With regard to the issue of Mr. Easley having enough time, the testimony they reference is that he was working 6 days a week. There was a time when he was working 6 days a week, but he also testifies that in the last few years when he was applying for this position, his caseload had gone down and he was working only 4 days a week. And what we've argued is that Justice Coleman has raised this issue, but did not even concern himself with talking to Mr. Easley to see if this was an issue. And that in and of itself, the Tenth Circuit, and we also have cited an opinion from the Southern District of Mississippi to say that that is evidence of pretext, where you have a concern and it's something that you can purely get the other side's opinion on and you essentially choose not to. A jury can infer the reason you're choosing not to is because you want it to be that conclusion. You want to have a reason not to hire Mr. Easley. That's pretext. And that's what we have here. It's not an issue we're saying that they needed to interview Mr. Easley to know who he was. They knew who he was. He practiced before them for years. They knew him from the Mississippi Supreme Court. He was a well-known lawyer throughout the state. But with regard to any concern they had, with regard to necessity of time, that's something, honestly, we're not asking for a formal interview. I don't know what the difference between formal and informal is in this context. And I don't know how they claim it's informal and don't explain what a formal interview is, but that is really irrelevant. It's something that could have been solved with a phone call, not even an interview. But they weren't interested in that. And that's what's important. And what we're trying to explain to the court is this is what a jury can pick up on and say they were more interested in trying to find a reason not to hire Mr. Easley, trying to set something aside. With regard to his reputation for continuances, this is where they've added and manipulated their reason. They cite to cases that are not before Judge Howard, Judge Kitchens, or Judge Coleman, which all three admit they did not. And Appellee's counsel during the deposition went on and on about appellant's record as a trial lawyer to try to explain as if asking for a continuance is a nuance in the practice of law. And I think we all know it's pretty regular. I know I ask for them on a weekly basis, it feels like. It's pretty regular. That doesn't mean a lawyer's incompetent or is not able to do his job. It just means sometimes he is busy. And at one point, Mr. Easley was pretty busy. He was working 6 days a week. He admits that. But at the time he was seeking the position, he was only working four. They also mentioned that the county has no involvement except for following the court's order. Well, that's not necessarily true. The county decides what the pay rate is. They decide whether they wanted to provide health insurance. They're the ones that submitted the application for PERS for retirement. There's not a particular office building for the public defenders, but they're the ones that decide whether there is. They decide when that pay goes up, down, changes, whatever they wants to do. They decide whether they want to have a public defender's office. They can eliminate it. And since they're not really following the law, they really have a lot more, because they're just, both the county and the circuit court are just doing as they please and following the law as they please. And I think that is also an issue of pretext, in some sense, to show that the circuit judges are just doing what they want to get the result that they want. They're in charge, it's the irony of they're in charge of enforcing the law, yet it is undisputed that they are not. And it's very clear their reasons for not are contradictory. And they contradict themselves, they contradict the appellee in this situation in what they put forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Norris. In your case and all of today's cases are under submission. The court is in recess under the